Welcome to And the Writer Is with Ross Golan. There are millions of singers, thousands of artists, and only 40 songs per genre at a time. These are the stories of the hottest creatives, the most venerable legends, artists, songwriters, executives, and more. Follow our socials and share your music with the And the Writer Is community. We'll see you all there, and now, here's this week's episode. Hey guys, I'm excited to tell you a little bit about one of today's sponsors, Peer Music. During a time of intense consolidation in the music industry, Peer Music's rich legacy is something that can't be bought. Peer Music has been family-run since it was founded in 1928. From its entrepreneurial roots, the company has grown into one of the largest and most respected independent music publishing and neighboring rights companies in the industry. They have 39 offices in 32 countries, so they are big enough to help your music reach the entire world. Peer Music represents some of the biggest names in music, including our former guest, Pooh Bear, David Lee Murphy, David Foster, Nothing But Thieves, Gabby Moreno, Cheyenne, The Tragically Hip, and many, many more. And Peer Music Neighboring Rights represents over 300 record labels and more than 3,000 artists, including Billie Eilish, Imagine Dragons, Martin Garrix, David Guetta, Metallica, Megan Thee Stallion, Her, and Stromae. Delivering nearly 100 years of music publishing excellence, Peer Music is a trusted and widely respected leader in our music community. If you want to learn more, I recommend you go to at Peer Music on all their social media sites and check out peermusic.com. Chartmetric is proud to sponsor the upcoming season of And the Writer Is. As the go-to source for up-to-date global social, streaming, and audience data for artists and music industry professionals, Chartmetric strives to ensure everyone can have a successful career in music. Their easy-to-understand and powerful analytics on over 10 million artists and 100 million tracks will help answer all of your questions, from tracking your stats to discovering new talents. Throughout this season, we'll be showcasing Chartmetric data to reveal insights about our featured artists, like how Noah Kahan is currently the top performing artist from Vermont by Spotify monthly listeners. Plans start as low as $10 a month. Learn more and get started today at chartmetric.com. Let me tell you about ASCAP. ASCAP is America's only creator-first performing rights organization and the only one that operates on a not-for-profit basis. They were founded by songwriters, composers, and publishers, and they're still governed by them today. ASCAP's main job is to pay you royalties when songs you write are streamed, broadcast on radio or TV, or played live. And they're so good at collecting royalties that in 2023, they distributed a record $1.592 billion to ASCAP members. But they do other things too. In fact, they go to Washington all the time to advocate for your songwriter rights, which is more important than ever in the age of AI. ASCAP represents over 975,000 members, including this episode's guest, Maggie Lindemann. If you are a songwriter or composer, ASCAP is where you belong. You can learn more about joining ASCAP at ASCAP.com/yjoin and follow at ASCAP on socials. Welcome to And the Writer Is. I am your host, Ross Golan. Today's future superstar's journey to stardom began on the World Wide Web. At a young 17 years old, she was quickly noticed by fans and industry professionals alike and has since accumulated more than a billion streams, sold out her first headlining tour, spearheaded her own clothing line, and started her own podcast, proving that she's not just a pretty girl, but an entrepreneurial artiste. All the way from San Antonio, Texas, because it's summer, this advocate's metamorphosis has captivated audiences around the world and empowered young women to own their truth in the face of societal pressures. And the writer is Maggie Lindemann.
Hey. Hello.
Okay, full disclosure, this is the first time we're meeting. So, hi.
Hello.
Nice to meet you.
Yes, nice to meet you too.
Wait, why Texas?
I'm from Texas.
Yeah.
And my boyfriend's from Texas. So we just decided to go to Texas.
Got it.
Yeah.
Are you like multi-generational Texan? Do your grandparents from there?
So my like dad is okay. So I'm pretty sure both my family's from Texas, but my mom like moved around a lot and then ended up back in Texas.
Okay.
So yes, I think
you were raised in Dallas though, right?
So till I was 14, I lived in Dallas, and then family moved to San Antonio, and then I moved to LA. And then, but like when I go home to visit, it's San Antonio. So I claim San Antonio.
Got it. I just assume everyone in San Antonio spends every night on Riverwalk, but it's probably a cliche.
No,
where in San Antonio do you live?
I live in a spot like kind of outside Bernie, which is just like a little town like outside of San Antonio.
When I think of Texas, I don't think of rock music, which is not fair because there's a lot of rock music there. But it's, you know, it's the South, you know?
Yeah.
You know, when you grew up, what music were your parents listening to?
Rock. So my dad loves like indie rock, alternative rock. He loves like all alternative. And then my mom is like very hardcore, like she likes metal. And
really?
Yeah, like metal music. And then my brother.
Like who?
So I listened to a lot of like Disturbed growing up. We listened to, oh my God, like Evanescence was one of my favorites growing up. My mom like really liked Evanescence. Linkin Park was one of them. And then my dad was like very, like he likes Cage the Elephant. And
oh, cool.
Like, I'm so bad with names, like off the top of my head, but stuff like that. And then like my mom likes Nirvana and I don't know.
When
like
I think of, people in your age group, I don't assume that they play instruments. I assume that they're probably really computer savvy. Like a lot of people say that the first instrument people get now are computers.
Yeah.
But you actually play, you know, instruments. What? How old were you when you were? Like, there's one thing to listen to music. It's another thing to actually want to create music or play music. Was it sort of like, hey, you need to practice? Or was it something that was like, oh, I want to play music?
So when I was like pretty young, my grandparents had like an electric piano in their room. So we were there a lot because they lived really close to us. So I would always go to my grandparents' house and like just go to their room and play on the piano. And my grandpa is actually very, very musically talented. Like he is self-taught, like amazing at piano. So he can just do everything by ear. So like when I was little, I was like, oh, I can play by ear. And I would like watch YouTube videos and just like try to learn. So like early on, I was really into piano. I took a lot of piano lessons and I really, really wanted to play piano. And then as I got a little older, I realized like I really liked guitar and I wanted to play guitar. So I started taking lessons and doing that whole thing. And yeah, I just like enjoyed it.
Were you good at it?
I mean, I wouldn't call myself like a pro, but I can, you know, I can play.
How soon were you, I mean, now I know you can play, but at the time, you know, you're playing all these instruments. When did you realize, oh, maybe you're, we know a lot of people who sit at a piano and playing around, but there's some people where it's like, hey, that person's actually really good at it, or that person can sing, or that person, you know, how soon were people saying, no, you should keep making music?
So I only really had, I used to be really shy when it came to singing, so I never sang in front of my family. I never sang in front of anyone. There was
Why?
Only, I don't know, I was just like really shy at first. Even when I first started making music and I would have shows, I was so shy. I was just had really bad stage fright and I just hated singing in front of people. Even now, like when people are like, oh, can you sing for me? No, definitely not. I'm not about to start singing for you. But I don't know, I was just really shy. So I only had one friend growing up that actually ever heard me sing. And she was the one who was like, you should post singing videos and you should actually like sing in front of people and let your voice be heard. So that's the reason I started uploading videos. And I didn't know I could actually sing or I was had any sort of musical talent until my manager ended up finding me when I was 16.
Who was your friend?
Her name's Morgan.
Do you still send her songs?
No, I don't. But, you know, we still follow each other on Instagram. I still check up on her every now and then. So
your manager finds you at 16 years old. But it wasn't through the same sort of normal channels. Like you were posting on sort of, you know, it's Keek, right?
Keek, yeah.
What is Keek?
So.
And why are you uploading to that?
So before Instagram had videos, there was an app called Keek where a lot of people, this is before Vine too. So there was a lot of people posting videos on Keek. It was kind of like a linked thing. So like you could go to someone's Instagram and find their Keek. And it was like, I don't remember, but it was like kind of linked. So it was basically the video app for Instagram. So I would upload my videos there. And then people could find my Instagram or like whatever else. But it was just the only video app at the time. Obviously, there was YouTube, but that was like a whole nother type of like uploading and doing stuff. So I just used Keek.
You've been very vocal about, you know, what a woman has to go through being a musician versus not just being a man or any gender, but, you know, the idea of posting videos of you doing music and people looking at you as something different.
Yeah.
How soon after releasing videos did you recognize that duality and that complexity?
I think it started when I started putting music out, because it was one side of it was people just were like, oh, you're like a social media artist, which I think now it's funny because everyone's a social, like literally everyone starts out on social media. There's like, that's the way to go now. But at the time it was kind of like still new. So people were like not taking me seriously in that way. And then people were saying I was just doing it because, like, why not? Like, oh, I can make music. Why not? And then the whole thing with, like, oh, you're just people only focusing on me because, like, my face. Or, like, they don't care about my music at all. They just want to look at my face or, like, follow me on Instagram and like my pictures. So I think when I started releasing music is when I really felt that.
Wait, why did you feel it when you were releasing music? Was it?
Because, like, before that, I would do singing videos and stuff, but I don't think people really like, I don't know. It wasn't a thing where people were commenting saying like, oh, we just want to see your face or whatever. It wasn't that yet. I think when I started releasing music, people just started being mean about it. I don't know.
Do you read comments?
I do. I try not to, but not on everything, but like I used to like look up my name on Twitter and like read that stuff, but it's just not, I can't read that stuff anymore. But I do read Instagram sometimes.
How do you cope with that? Because even if I read comments for, you know, it's like, it can be difficult.
Yeah.
You know, especially because it's not like.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
You know, you can release songs. And, you know, if you're a musician, like that's the goal is to release music.
Yeah.
And then it's like the comments just reduce everything down to something cheap.
Yeah.
You know?
Definitely. I think for me, I've come a long way with hate. I used to be really, really sensitive to it. I just anything would upset me. But I think now I've realized, like, I've put in so much work. My whole life is music. Everything I do is music. Everything I do is around music. I work really hard. And I think when I put out music and if I read a comment that says something negative about my music or says I get an industry plan or stupid comments like that. And it's just like, I know the work I put in. Like if I was an industry plan, I would hope to be way bigger than I am. Like, you know? So when I read these type of comments, I think I just know my value at this point and know how much work I've put into stuff that I don't let that kind of stuff bother me. I think what bothers me more is like when people comment about me personally. The music you can comment on because I'm releasing that to the world. I expect people to comment on it. It's when people say stuff about like me personally that I don't, that bothers me.
Yeah, it's so weird that every, you know, I've been trying to wrestle with the idea that a critic, if everyone's a critic, that's fine. But like just the word critic is so negative. It's like this idea that you're supposed to give a critique.
Yeah.
And not be, you know, like, oh, we're all appreciators.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it'd be so nice if people were like, you know what's great about her songs? Like, the guitar parts are actually really cool. And like her energy, you know. And,
yeah.
And then you could be like, the, you know, maybe it's, I wish the bridge was different.
Yeah.
Or, but now people lead with, oh, that song, the bridge is crap. You know, it's like,
yeah.
You know, whatever it is. It's like nobody really takes the time to actually say, oh, man, I actually appreciate the effort that it takes to be in the ring,
yeah.
You know, to like be, you know, I don't know, just to be part of the creation.
Yeah.
Let's just go to, you know, back a little bit. So Gerald, your manager, shout out Gerald, he's in one room over. You know, he finds you and he says, you know, you could do this. Why was that the... how does that go from that to, you know, knocking on your heart coming out? You know, what's the process from somebody saying, you know, hey, I want to be your manager to actually a song coming out?
So he had actually emailed me twice. And at the time, my parents were basically my managers. Like they were monitoring emails and stuff like that. So my dad had actually seen the email and deleted it because he didn't think it was real or he was like, oh, Maggie can't sing. Like, what are you talking about? So, because I don't even, maybe I'm wrong about this, but I don't even think my parents knew I was uploading singing videos. Like, I did not tell my parents stuff like that. That was
wow.
Very private. Like, that was my personal, like, I didn't share stuff like that at school. Like, I was, like, people knew at school, but it was something I wasn't, like, vocally expressing. So I think when he got that email, he was just like, what are you talking about? So he deleted it. And then he ended up emailing again, and my mom had seen it. And my mom was like, oh my God, we have to go to LA. Like, this is an opportunity. So we went and met with him at Capitol Records for the first time, which was really cool. And so met with him and then met back up with him another time. And that was when they put me in a studio and like heard me sing for the first time. And then after that day, it was just like work all the time. It was going to vocal lessons like 2 times, 3 times a week. I was like trying to learn piano again, like trying to get back into that. Just like a lot of stuff like that, just trying to learn stuff, music. And then it was recording a lot of stuff and trying to learn how to like hit notes right and do all that. And then the music came.
Going into studios versus, you know, shooting a video of yourself are so different.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think people realize, you know, it can take you weeks to record a 3-minute song. Mm-hmm. It takes you 3 minutes to record a 3-minute video,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Even if you're really good at it, you mm-hmm. know? Maybe even the better you are, the longer it takes. Because, you know,
yeah, it was just weird. I mean, having headphones on and, like, hearing yourself and it... Now it's funny because it's just so, I just do it all the time. But at the time it was so foreign. It just sounded weird and everything was just weird.
When, you know, Knocking on Your Heart, it does pretty well. It certainly was like, okay, we're releasing a song. But
this,
you know, Couple of Kids, which is the next single, does, you know, 4 times as many streams and whatnot. Yeah. And it starts to sort of, I shouldn't say like legitimize, but any of those people who were haters before, it starts to become, well, you know, 54 million streams doesn't just happen because people are, you know, people like to look at someone, it's because they like to listen to someone.
Yeah.
Did you find that to be, was that validating, or was it something where it's like, I still have more to prove? I mean, what, you know, or is it both?
It was super validating, but yeah, I mean, I definitely didn't feel like an artist at that point. I felt like there was so much to do. And I also wasn't fully confident in the stuff I was doing yet. I was just kind of, like, when I listen back to that music, it sounds very starter, you know? It's like my first two songs. Like, you know, I wasn't an artist yet. I was just making music. But I think I just knew I wanted to do so much more. I just didn't really know what that was yet. So, yeah, I don't know. I felt like I had so much work to do still.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to fast forward where I have questions on the, you know, being an artist is a choice. There's lots of singers, there's lots of people doing covers, there's lots of people doing songs, but, you know, being an artist means this is who I am. I'm really, like, who I am. And who you are has evolved significantly from the beginning, you know? Without giving away too much, when did you feel like you were an artist? When do you make that choice? And did somebody say, hey, you should make a choice? Or
no,
was it natural?
It was natural. I felt like I was finally an artist when I did my EP.
Mm.
Yeah.
And that makes sense.
Yeah.
Was it the aesthetic that went along with that or the music?
It was everything. It was my, after, like I was really happy for kind of the first time when I did like Would I and Human. I was really happy with those songs, but I still didn't feel like I was as connected yet. And then I just had like this big life moment happen, and I just decided that if I wasn't doing exactly what I want to do, why am I doing this?
Like, what was that life moment?
So I went on an Asia tour, and the first stop on the tour, I was arrested. And I just remember I was so mad because I was like, damn, I'm going through this crazy stuff right now. And I'm not even really happy with what I'm doing. I love making music. I love performing. Like, I love doing all this stuff, but I'm not doing what I want to do. I'm just doing it so that I can do it. So it was just this moment that I was like, I don't want to do this if it's not fun for me in every aspect. And so after that is when I finally was like, I'm making the music I want to make. Like, label, if you don't want me to make this music with you guys, like, we can go our separate ways, but I want to make this music. I like the way I dress. Like, I have so many ideas. I don't want to make this type of music. So that's when everything switched. I started making the EP. And it all just kind of like fell in together. I felt like the aesthetic, the music, just everything just came together. And I felt finally like I had my own thing that
Your
I'm
identity.
Comfortable in. Yeah, I have my own identity.
I'm like all over the place here, but in a segment called What Would Lolo Ask Maggie Lindemann on And the Writer Is, Lolo says to me, she said, look, you know, I think you should ask about how she started out so bubblegum with their song Pretty Girl, and then the story of how that came out, and the story how Cheat Codes redid it, and then, you know, she was asking about how what we just talked about. But going back to Pretty Girl, which was sort of the big song, you know, as Lolo asked, you know, or at least suggested, you know, tell me about the story of how it came out and how Chica's redid it.
So with Pretty Girl, it was like, that's when I was going through the whole thing of, I felt like no one was taking me seriously and everyone just kind of looked at me as just someone on Instagram who decided to make music. And it was really frustrating because I started out making singing videos. Like when I first got on Instagram in like 2012, 2013, I was posting videos of me singing. So never like, yes, I was posting pictures of myself also, but I wasn't just on Instagram doing that. Like, I was actually singing. I wanted to sing. So when people started saying that I was just putting out music because that's what people do when they're like, oh, I have followers, like, now I'm going to release music. It was, like, really upsetting to me. And people were just saying, oh, like, we don't want to hear your music. We just want to see your face, stuff like that. It was just really bothering me because it was just something I really wanted to do. I love music and I really wanted to make music. So that's kind of how Pretty Girl came about, the lyrics and everything. I was like making tweets about it and Pretty Girl actually came from some of my tweets. So that's how it was crafted. And then it was out for a little bit and Cheat Codes was on my label. So it was some, it just ended up happening.
Yeah.
They were like, yeah, we'll do a remix. We had no idea it was going to do what it did. Like, I don't think anyone had any idea.
So crazy.
Yeah. No one knew it was going to do that at all. So once that started happening, immediately I had never done festivals. I had never even done shows. Like, I think maybe I had done like one little show before, and then Pretty Girl started popping off and it was like, you have to fly to Norway and you're going to perform in front of 90,000 people singing this song. I had never done anything like that before. I had like no practice. I think maybe we had like 2 days of rehearsals. Like, I'd never done anything like that before. Even if that, I don't even remember if we even did rehearsals. Cause I just walked out singing one song. Like, that's all I did. And I remember like everything just happened really, really, really fast. And it was just like terrible. It was like the hate was crazy. Because I had no experience. And I think still now with a lot of artists, things pop off so fast. Like, TikTok pops off songs so fast. It could be an artist that had just uploaded like one song in their life and now they have like hundreds of millions of streams and they're expected to be like a perfect artist. So that started happening. And it was so fun because I was going to like all these places and doing all this really, really cool stuff. But it was like, I'm a brand new artist. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not even an artist. I just like made a song and it happened to go crazy thanks to, you know? So yeah, that's how all that happened.
If you're a songwriter or composer, you have to join a performing rights organization or PRO. Performance royalties are an essential part of your income, if not your only income. ASCAP is America's first PRO and the only one that operates on a not-for-profit basis, which means the money they collect goes to their songwriters, composers, and music publishers, not outside investors, not big corporations. And ASCAP supports you in a lot of different ways, even beyond the royalties. They run workshops, panels, and networking events all the time. They've got tons of resources on their website to help you learn about the music industry. They've even got a wellness program. I really respect that ASCAP is a true democracy. ASCAP members elect their board of directors, and the board is made up of music writers and publishers like you. They've got over 975,000 members, including our guest, Maggie Lindemann. You can learn more about joining ASCAP at ASCAP.com/YJoin and follow at ASCAP on socials. Hey guys, Peer Music is a leading music publishing and neighboring rights company that has been championing songwriters and artists for nearly 100 years. Their musical journey began with a revolutionary A&R man named Ralph S. Peer, who is widely credited with the first Latin recording, the first blues recording, and, of course, the big bang of country music, the Bristol Sessions. Peer Music has built their company on their unwavering devotion to music creators and performers, and to this day is still championing songwriters and promoting songs of cultural importance. Peer Music represents some of the biggest names in music, including our former guest Pooh Bear, David Lee Murphy, David Foster, Nothing But Thieves, Gabby Moreno, Cheyenne, The Tragically Hip, and many, many more. And Peer Music Neighboring Rights represents 300 record labels and more than 3,000 artists, including Billie Eilish, Imagine Dragons, Martin Garrix, David Guetta, Metallica, Megan Thee Stallion, Her, and Stromae. So, if you want to learn more about a global music publishing and neighboring rights company that moves with integrity and treats their roster like family, go check out peermusic.com or follow them on social media at peermusic. Our good friends at Chartmetric have all the data you need to power your music career. From playlist placements to stream counts to follower demographics and many more, it's never been easier to understand how your artists fit in the music industry and how they can grow. Chartmetric does the work for you, providing actionable insights and visuals on their up-to-date global data that covers over 10 million artists and 100 million songs, so there's no math required. Use it to find out things about your favorite artists and any of the artists and writers on this podcast. Plans start as low as $10 a month. Learn more and get started today at chartmetric.com. Going and performing for 90,000, I mean, if you said 3,000, it would be a lot.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's one person. You can't really digest how many people that is. Stepping out on a stage with little experience and then performing in front of, you know, 90,000 people or whatever. Were you nervous, or is it such a big number that you don't even have like the ability to feel?
Oh my God, no, I was so nervous. Yeah. I was so excited, but I was so nervous. Also, my mic wasn't working like in the beginning, so that didn't help. Like I walked out and I'm singing and like my mic isn't on. And I just was panicking. I was like literally about to start crying because this is my first thing. I'm embarrassing myself right now. And it was just really scary, but I remember having so much fun. I had so much fun. I sounded terrible. Like, I looked terrible. I sounded terrible. It was terrible, but it was so fun. I just had so much fun. And that was the first time I had heard people singing the song. Like, because my mic wasn't working, so my ears were just, like, I could hear everything. And everyone was singing so loud. And that was the first moment that I realized, like, oh, my God. Like, this is real. People actually know the song. Like, that's crazy.
You wrote that song with Sasha Sloan and Sean Meyer. Mm-hmm. Shout out, guys.
Yes.
Good people.
Yes.
Jason, great producer. Were you able to, I guess there's one thing again where you're releasing music. It's another one when you're starting to co-write with people and celebrate wins like that kind of song.
Yeah.
How and why did you start collaborating with outside writers? And did you find in that experience of performing in front of all those people, did you ever have moments of, I don't know, recalling like the writing process? You know what I mean? Are you ever like how crazy it is that all these people are singing to this song?
Yeah.
And then bringing yourself back to like, well, how we wrote this in a nowhere, you know?
Yeah, it was like... Also, shout out Cade because he was a big part of Pretty Girl too. He killed it. But I don't know. I feel like just because that song literally came from tweets. So it's like thinking about me just tweeting, like, guys, I tweeted, I don't even remember. But going from something like that to then being on stage in front of all these people hearing it. Yeah, it's just always such a crazy experience because in the room you never anticipate what it could be. I think you're just in the moment and writing a song just as therapy. You don't know how crazy it's going to go. So,
well, especially, you know, and I imagine, I think that for the billion stream club on Spotify, I want to say there's like 100 songs, 110 songs or something. It's not a lot of songs.
Yeah.
So even if you think this song's great.
Yeah.
If your benchmark is, you know, a song that has 50,000 streams, or even the original is 100,000, which is a Spotify hit for what that is. Or sorry, 100 million. You know, if you have 50 million or 100 million, you know, to do 10 times that.
Yeah.
It's just such a different level. You don't really write from the perspective of already knowing. So, you know, of course it's a surprise.
Yeah. It was crazy.
It obviously did well in all different kinds of countries.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to travel in these different countries. How did traveling and performing this song in all these places influence how you were writing after that?
So after Pretty Girl, it was kind of like I needed to obviously follow up. But for so long, I think one thing that went really wrong with my like artistry after Pretty Girl was pushing Pretty Girl for so long and having me do so much for Pretty Girl without me like going back into the studio sooner and like writing another song. Because for Pretty Girl, it was just constant doing things for this one song, mm-hmm. which is important to, you know, work a song, but if you don't follow up with another song very quickly, that's when you kind of, it ends. So I think that was one thing that went really wrong with that whole thing, was just not coming out with another song sooner. Because after that, I released Obsessed. And I think Obsessed is a really great pop song. Like, I think that's a really good song, but it just waited so long after Pretty Girl to come out.
Is that because you didn't have the other songs written, recorded, or is that because the label was dragging their feet on releasing something that follows up?
It was a little bit of both. Obsessed didn't get... That was so long ago. But Obsessed wasn't even a thing until way later. Like, it was not ready. It was not written. It was, like, nothing. So I think that, but then it was a little bit of dragging... just because we were still like in the Pretty Girl mindset. But yeah, it was just a little bit of everything. It was like, yeah, it was a lot.
Well, shout out Lolo for the,
yes,
for the heads up. Okay. So you were saying Human and Would I sort of, you know, become the first moment where you're like, oh, now I know who I am.
Yeah.
Do you have expectations? What I love about it is like, here you're saying who I am. It's so different than Pretty Girl.
Yeah.
Do you have expectations in, I don't want to say like repeating the success, because success isn't, if the success is the writing, then you're achieving it.
Yeah.
If the success is the numbers, then at that time it's like, okay, well now I'm releasing songs that are my identity. Do you feel like those... Is the goal to have those mix, or is it like I don't care about the Pretty Girl experience. Now my goal is to be, you know, I'm gonna, you know, I guess I'm trying to figure out how do you grapple with those things.
I think that was so after Obsessed, Would I and Human, I sat on those songs for so long because there was a very constant internal battle of, okay, I know what I'm capable of doing and I know what will work for me, but I'm so unhappy doing it. I'm so unhappy going and performing Pretty Girl and Obsessed, not because they're not great songs, like they're good songs, just not for me. They were good songs for someone else who wanted to make that type of music, but I just felt like, for me, I would get on stage and I don't dance. Like, I'm not a dancer. Those songs, like, you know, when I hear those songs, I think there's backup dancers and I have like a little choreo and you know what I mean? So I would perform those songs and I just felt so awkward and out of place. I felt like I had no idea what I was doing. I looked stupid. And so I was in this constant battle of, I know what I'm capable of, but am I happy? And I'm so miserable right now. I was so depressed because I just felt so lost. Like, I had no identity. I had no idea who I was at this point. I think I'm like 19 or 20. And I'm like, okay, I'm like getting older. I need to like figure out who I am. So that's why it took so long. I just was in this battle of like, do I want to just be successful and rich and have money and be able to travel and do all this stuff? Or do I want to be happy? And I just went with being happy. And so when I put out Would I and Human, I literally had no expectations for the songs. I had no idea what they were going to do. And I really didn't care. I just wanted to do something that I felt good about. And the reaction from Would I was like, I think exactly what I needed to even push further into who I am. Because people, like real like other artists that I would never have expected to like reach out to me, like reached out about that song, just being like, wow, this is so good. Like, this is like a real song. So,
yeah, authenticity is really obvious to people who make music all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not, but the thing is, it's not like Pretty Girl isn't authentic.
Yeah.
But I think when you dive deeper and deeper and deeper, the more vulnerable you are, I keep trying to get artists to go be vulnerable. It's okay if the song doesn't even come out, at least for the day when we write, let's write from a vulnerable place. And then at least you'll feel good when you leave the studio, you know, because you don't really know what you're going to get.
Exactly.
Travis Barker, he's so fun to work with. So talented. It's to get that cosign at that point, especially with what Travis was starting to go through as a producer.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that sort of changes, getting, at least from my perspective, as I'm sure your parents probably lost their minds when they knew, but that feels like having that kind of cosign legitimizes this new direction that you went in. I mean, maybe it comes before that, but something like that changes it. How did Travis get involved?
So when we had friends go, I went to New York and I did, I performed for my label. And I don't know exactly what happened, but... someone had called him and FaceTimed him, and they were like, Maggie, come out. We have someone who wants to talk to you. Went out. He was on the phone, and I guess they had asked him if he would do a remix. I'm not really sure, but he was like, I would love to do a remix on the song and make it feel a little bit more rocky, because the song was like ska, had a lot of like No Doubt influence. So he was like, we can make it more rock or whatever. And I was like, okay, yeah, obviously, like, I would love to do this. Yes, please, let's do this. So then I flew back and I went into the studio with him, and literally, like, he did one pass of drums and it was amazing. And we all had come out, like, I had a video person, like a photographer, everything. And we all went out to the studio and he literally did one pass, and we were like, I guess it's done. Do you want to do it again? He did it again. It was perfect. So we're like, okay, well, I guess we're done. Like, I don't know. But yeah, having that cosign was crazy at the time, because I really wanted to make that music. I just didn't know how to ease into it. So that song was the first time. Like, I remember getting a comment. This comment has stuck with me. That was like, you always use the Travis Barker remix on all of your like promotional videos. Like, get another song or something. And I thought that was so funny, because I was like, this is the first song that I have done that I felt like was authentic. Like, this is me. So I was using it for literally everything until I came out with something else.
Yeah.
So that was, the first time I just felt like, okay, I can do it.
Jumping to Moons and Stars, big, mm-hmm. big song. How do you feel about featuring on records as opposed to being the... You know, there's sometimes where, you know, the Lolo song, like, you guys did it together. It's like there's sometimes where it's sometimes yours, sometimes you're a feature.
Yeah.
How do you feel about, how does that change, you know? Do you care if you're the feature on it? Do you care if you're the lead, you know?
No, I like featuring on songs. I will only feature on a song if I, like, really like the song. So I feel like all the features I've done, I've really liked the songs, and I love Snot, Lolo. Like, everyone I've done features with has been really cool. So, yeah, I don't mind. Like, I love doing features. It's less work for me, too, to go in and film a music video or whatever. Like, it's fun because it's not on me. Like, I don't have to make sure everything's, you know, in place. So it's usually just a fun experience.
It's hard to think that Paranoia, which comes out in 2021, was, like, your first non-single.
Mm. Yeah.
Why did it take so long to release a compilation of songs?
So there had been so many times where I had made an EP and had enough songs to make an EP. And then I was like, yeah, I don't like this. So the whole thing was, it was singles for a while. And I think being with a label, it was like, okay, she's a singles artist. So for a while, it was like singles, singles, singles. And then we were making an EP, and then I stopped making the EP. And then just a lot of issues in between, just personally and in music. So it just never got to a point where there was an EP. But then I got out, I signed to a distribution in 2020. And I don't know, I just was like, that was the moment. I was working so much, and that was like the first time I had full creative control too. So everything I was writing was like actually coming from me, and no one was editing it. It was all me. So I'm really glad, even though it took so long, I'm really glad that was the first time I made an EP, because if I had put out an EP before this, I don't think I would have liked it at all. And I think I would be really upset. So
She Knows It is a song that is really about coming out. And I mean, it's not only about that, but that's part of it. Again, feeling like going back to the Pretty Girl era and before that, where you talk about how people kind of pigeonhole you, and they sort of say, well, you should be this or you should be that, or they judge what you look like and the way you sound. Did you find that people were generally supportive of coming out, or do you find that people were continuing to be judgmental, or was it a bit of both?
I think when I had originally came out, it was like, I think I came out in like 2016. I think I had like maybe just turned 18. So when I had originally came out, the video, like, I don't even want to talk about it. It was like so cringe. But at the time, it was just, I did it like on live, and I was like crying and stuff, because it is an emotional like experience to come out. It's scary. You don't know how people are going to react. So I think it was mostly very supportive, but I think because I was crying, I hate that I was crying. Okay, I am not a person to cry on the internet. Like, I do not cry on the internet, but it was just an emotional experience. And at this time, I was very still like on social, like I would like go live and do that and like talk and stuff like that. So I think like at the time I was still like, I didn't think before I did things. So like, I was like, oh, I'm going to come out on live. Like, this is going to be great. And then I'm very emotional. So like the minute I started talking about it, I started crying. So I think some people I remember were very like, oh, this is very attention seeking. Like, she's definitely just doing this for attention, or whatever it was, just for attention. But I think for the most part, people were really supportive of it. And then now it's like not even a thing. Like, just, you know.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Don't even care anymore. It's whatever.
Are all generations the same, or is it specific? Is it that this generation is more open to it, and all other generations were always like this, but they just didn't have the vocabulary or the ability to do it? Or is it that this generation has the way to discuss it, and also this is part of the evolution of, you know, society?
Well, I think this new generation, like maybe the generation below me, is really accepting. This is definitely a different, we're seeing like a shift for sure. So I think, I don't know, I think this new generation is really open to everything. They seem to be very accepting and open and stuff. But I think my generation too, I think, is pretty accepting, like, for the most part. But in 2016, there was still the generation above me that was, you know what I mean? So it wasn't just coming out to these, like, kids now. It's coming out to the people above me and older than me. So I think that's what was kind of scary, because, like, even texting my mom and my dad was really scary. And, my brother finding out.
How did they all react?
They were fine. Like, they... Because I texted them. I didn't call them or anything. I just texted them.
What did you say?
So I texted them. It's so stupid. Like, this is just a young person being so impulsive. So right before I went live, I texted my parents. And I was like, I'm about to go live. And I just want you guys to know, like, I like girls, whatever. And I don't want you to hate me. Or I don't remember exactly what I said. But I was like, I don't want you to hate me or, like, think of me any differently. Like, blah, 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 blah. Like, I hope you guys still love me or something. And they texted me back, like, what are you talking about? Like, of course we still love you. Like, we don't care. We're happy that you told us whatever. Like, I'm very, very grateful that my parents were accepting about it, because I grew up very religious and a lot of people around me aren't accepting of that. And I didn't, obviously, like, I know my parents, but you don't know certain things. Like, I don't know how they're going to react because I've never seen them react to that. So I think I was just scared because I didn't know if they were going to be like, oh, that's not godly, or like, we don't approve of that or whatever. But they didn't. They were really, really accepting. And
were there people, what religion? Was it Catholicism? Is it
just Christian?
Christian?
Yeah.
Were there people that were part of that community that weren't accepting? Or I mean, I'm sure there were, but like ones that you were close with?
So, yes. So my best friend growing up, I don't remember what grade I was in. I think maybe going into ninth grade, like summer of eighth going into ninth. I had this friend, and it was like, so girls will like kiss each other, like sometimes, like your friend, like you give them like, oh, I love you, like a little peck or something. And it truly, like, okay, so I had posted this picture on Instagram. This is in like 2013. And I was like pecking my friend or something. I don't even remember. It was so stupid. I'm like in eighth grade, right? I had posted it. I don't even remember. But I did this. And my friend, my best friend at the time, had texted me and was like, this is disgusting. Like, I cannot support you if this is what you're doing. Like, I love you, but like, we can't be friends anymore, basically. And at the time, like, I knew I liked girls. You know, I think there was a little bit of, and that, I'm pretty sure that girl ended up coming out too. Like, you know, like, I don't want to put her out there, but I'm pretty sure she came out too. So there was definitely a little like hidden gayness, but I think at the time it like, I was just like a friend pick. I didn't think of it. This is also like 2012, 2013. Like, you know, I didn't think anything of it. I'm like a kid. So, yeah, she had like said that, and that stuck with me for so long. Just after that, I was like so in the closet, like never again would do this. I think after that is maybe when I started, like, I don't even hug people anymore. I'm very like to myself. Like, I don't like being touched. I don't like hugging. I don't like anything. So it like really, really affected me like really bad.
Do you think that being kind of forced in the closet in that moment, it can't be a coincidence that as you realize, oh, I don't want to be this kind of artist, I want to be this kind of artist, and in order to do this kind of art, I need to be more authentic.
Yeah.
And therefore I need to be more open about, you know, who I am. Like, yeah. It seems like the whole aesthetic, sonically, visually, everything that you've done, it's like the line almost happens right when you're like, this is who I really am.
Yeah.
And it's good to know your family was accepting.
Yeah, I'm like really blessed in that way. I think my family, my mom is still religious, you know, she goes to church all the time, whatever. But they're very accepting. I'm really lucky.
Are you religious?
I wouldn't say I'm very religious. You know, I believe in whatever, but I'm not religious.
Mm-hmm. Is some of that the nature of being? Is any of that because of music?
I think moving to LA when I was 16 and experiencing a completely different side of life. I'm from Dallas, but I only did high school 1 year in Dallas, like half a year in Dallas. And then I moved to Burney, which is a small town. Now it's growing, but at the time it was like a small town in Texas. And it's a very religious town too. So I think going from that and then going to LA was a huge like eye-opening experience. I experienced so much different, like just a completely different life. And I mean, that's like a whole... That could be a whole nother conversation, but I feel like for me, I just realized a lot of stuff. And I think music has like a little to do with it. I don't know.
Sucker Punch. This point, the logical next step would be to do an album. Were you intentionally at that point being like, okay, I'm done with EPs, I'm done with like just like the one-off singles, I need to do it. Like, was it, why do a whole album and why now? You hadn't done one before that.
I think I was just ready to do one. I had so many songs. Like, I had been working on Paranoia for like a year or something, and I had made so many songs. I was literally in the studio every single day for like a little over a year. And that, like I said, that was like the first time I was really, I'd been writing before, but that was the first time I was writing. Like everything was me. And I didn't have, like I was writing with people, but I had no influence. Like it was literally all coming from me. And the writers I was writing with, it was like me telling them like, oh, I want to do this, instead of them kind of like leading me. So it was the first time I was just really doing it. And then I think after Paranoia, I only had maybe like a couple weeks in between that and the writing of Sucker Punch that I didn't do anything. So I was just ready to start writing again. And we just had so many songs that I liked that I was like, yeah, it's an album.
In this segment called What Would Paris Carney Ask Maggie Lindemann? Paris says, she goes, I'm curious if you have any tips on how to maintain your authenticity in a world of people that might be inspired by your art and start to copy it.
Well, my thing is, I think it's natural to draw inspiration from people. Like, I draw inspiration from people. But I think it's about making it your own. Like, you can't, I don't know, copying someone, it's just... You can only go so far being someone else. Like, you'll never, I think everyone as an artist, I don't want to speak for everyone, but I think for me as an artist, a huge thing is like, I want to leave a mark that's my own. I want people to hear a certain sound and be like, oh, that's like Maggie Lindemann. I want people to hear my music and immediately know it's me. And I want to do something that is recognizable. So I don't know. I feel like as an artist, that's like a huge thing. So I think if you want the same thing, you can't copy. You can draw inspiration, but you have to like make it your own.
What's next?
Another project.
What's that going to sound like?
I have no idea. I'm working on it right now, but with everything I've done, I have no idea how it's going to sound. Like, I'm just working and just making music. And then later on is when I hear everything like as a whole and I'm like, okay, I know how I want everything to sound. Like I want the production and stuff. But like Sucker Punch, all those songs kind of sounded, same with Paranoia, like everything sounded a little similar. And then we went back in and like destroyed everything and made everything sound way different.
Where do you see yourself in 10 years?
Oh. I really want to be touring still. Like, I really want to do bigger tours. I mean, a dream would be to do like arenas, amphitheaters, stuff like that. I hope I'm just happy, and I hope I'm still making music I want to make, and I hope in my personal life I'm still really happy.
What do you say to a kid in, you know, a girl in Dallas, Texas, who's 13 years old, who's gonna, who really likes playing music, but doesn't really know what to do with it?
Well, I would say upload videos of you playing music, because what the worst people could do is say no. Like, the worst that could happen is someone says no. But I think you have to put yourself out there in music. It's not something that is going to come to you by hiding. So put yourself out there. Don't listen to what other people say. That's my number one thing always. I say to people, do not listen to what other people say. Do not, you can take, you know, you can listen to opinions, but you don't need to listen to opinions. So I think just be yourself. Authenticity is what gets you far. And don't listen to what people say, especially older people in the industry say. Be yourself.
All right, so in this next segment, five for five, those five things, just tell me what comes off the top of your head.
Okay.
The national anthem.
Timberwolves.
I like that. Sick. Keek.
Singing.
Your clothing line.
Swix.
You have a podcast too.
Yeah.
So your podcast.
Weird.
Wait, extrapolate a little bit.
I say weird because it's just me talking, and I just like ramble and I just talk. I don't know. It's like, it's weird.
Your mom.
Love.
It's so interesting that, like, you know, here's somebody who likes, like you're saying, Deftones and Linkin Park.
Yeah.
You know, what you're doing now, I always say that I got my first record deal once I started writing music my parents didn't like.
Okay.
You know, because I think I tried to make music that they liked for a long time.
Yeah.
And then I started making music that my dad was like, I don't get this. And then I got a record deal, like right away.
Yeah.
It's like, huh. And yours is almost the exact opposite. It's like, I feel like the music, I imagine knowing what her like sonic palette is, that by the, when you're releasing those first couple songs, there's no way that she was probably very supportive, but it's not really the, you know, music she listens to. But now it's like, I bet they only listen to your music.
Oh yeah. I mean, so my brother's birthday, cause my brother's huge in it too. So, my brother's birthday was the same time I was playing Aftershock. Mm-hmm. And so I took him to Aftershock, and he, like, everyone we saw, like Papa Roach, Slipknot, Evanescence, oh my God, we saw literally everyone. There was a band, like, he took me to see that I'd never heard of. It was like an orchestra. They're like an orchestral metal something. I'd never heard of them, and it was so cool. Like, it was the coolest thing ever. But I mean, he was like so hype on that, and my parents were supposed to come, but they didn't end up being able to come, and they were like so hurt. But anytime I do a festival and it's like Rob Zombie or Evanescence or Papa Roach or like any of these people, my parents are like, can we come? Like, they get so excited. So it's really cool to have my parents. Like, now my mom came to the shows, a couple of the shows, and like my mom is like dancing around, like going crazy. And it's so cool to see, because like when I did my other shows, obviously they're supportive, but they're just listening. So it's really cool to have that, for sure.
That's amazing. Well, thank you for doing this. I know this is early on in many ways, and that, you know, hopefully we'll keep doing this and check in every so often. But, you know, it is really hard thinking of the advice you gave that young girl who's in Dallas. My biggest fear is that all of those videos that I did when I was that age would have come out, because I was... You know, those songs that I probably started writing when I was 14. Mm-hmm. So like those first like 5 years, I would write these songs that were just terrible. And I was able to not show anybody during it. you know?
I mean, that's a part of it.
And that, you know, I was able to kind of, by the time I was like, okay, I'm ready to put something out, for the most part, most stuff that's out there is me a little more baked.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it takes a bravery to do what you've done and to be able to have the confidence to change your career trajectory so early is an advantage where you're at. And most people who try to do that 10 years later, it's too late.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to hear that new music. You did it gracefully at a really good time. And it's inspiring to a lot of people. And I wish you the best.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
There you go.
This episode is produced by Joe London, Mega House Management, and myself. See you all next week. I'm Ross Golan, signing off.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.